There was once a German architect. He was an amateur archaeologist. His name was Robert Koldewey.
Yes.
You talk about his conundrum. What is that?
Well, the first book, the first part of the chapter of the book is an examination of kind of setting up the problem that scientists, archaeologists, and so on noticed. And Robert Koldewey was a German archaeologist. He was actually the man, George, that discovered the Ishtar Gate at Babylon. So the problem that he ran into, George, is that on that gate there are two creatures depicted. And one of them is a monster called the Sirish. This is, and I have pictures of this in the book. This monster, George, is nothing less than chimerical, because it's got the forepaws of a feline of some sort. It's got the hind legs of some sort of bird. Huh. And then, on top of all of this, as if that's not bad enough, it's got a tail that looks kind of like a scorpion sting and the head of a dragon. Now, the problem that Dr. Koldewey had was, when he discovered this occurs in the context of other animals that are real, number one. And number two, the second part of the problem is that this animal, unlike a lot of mythological creations that you find in Mesopotamian art, this animal did not change in its depiction over the millennia. It was always consistent. And this led Koldewey to the conclusion that what the Babylonians had been trying to depict was some sort of extinct creature, possibly a dinosaur, possibly an iguanodon. And that, of course, raised other problems, because at that time, of course, the dinosaurs were long extinct. So, you know, where did the Babylonians get this idea for this very strange chimerical creature? So Koldewey actually published a book about his archaeological findings, and he argued basically that this creature, whatever it was, had to have been real for them to have depicted it in a context with other real creatures. And so that's kind of how I launched the book into this whole problem of ancient engineering and the possibility that these ancient cultures actually knew about the existence of dinosaurs and other creatures.
These creatures, that do you think there are any of them roaming around now?
Another excellent question. And you know, George, that's such a fascinating question. It really, I think, would require a book of its own. And one of the things that I ran into is the research of Ivan Sanderson that many of your listeners will probably be familiar with. And Sanderson, for many years, George, maintained that there were so many reports and legends of very strange creatures, even resembling dinosaurs, coming out of Africa in particular, that there had to have been some basis, in fact, behind them. And even though I didn't talk about these reports in the book, because I discovered that, you know, to have done so would have required a book of its own, there are literally thousands of these reports, George. And I think that, yeah, you have to at least allow the possibility that some of these things might be around to this day. You know, my word, about 20 years ago, we had the case where fishermen discovered the case of the coelacanth, you know, which was supposedly extinct for 200 million years, and then all of a sudden they catch one.
Yeah.
know, that kind of blew the lid off of the theory. So, yeah, I think we have to credit these reports.
Oh, Joseph, I'm still convinced that Nessie out there in Loch Ness in Scotland is probably prehistoric.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm of the same opinion, George, because I think, if you recall, there was a submarine that they sent down, or a camera that they sent down, that took a picture of a large fin that looked like the fin off of an ancient dinosaur. So, yeah, I tend to agree with you.
You know, that was kind of poo-pooed, too. It was a picture that was a National Geographic.
Yes.
I think it was Japanese folks who took that picture.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have thought, Joseph, that the world would have gone wild with that. And they didn't. It had the fin of a plesiosaur, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and George, I think the reason there, and I get into this a bit in the book, I think the reason there is that we are looking at a bit of a cover-up. I think that there is such a vested interest in maintaining the status quo and maintaining the standard models of human evolution and the progress and history of civilization, that finding these things, finding these anomalies, just has to be suppressed. I mean, my word, you've had Michael Cremo and Richard Thompson on your show talking about forbidden archaeology and all the evidence that they've uncovered that mankind, or at least some genetic cousin of ours, was here on this planet long, long before modern man even came about. So I think, yeah, I think you're looking at a bit of a vested interest on the part of the academic powers that be that want to suppress this evidence, because it raises a lot of questions. I mean, we have to admit, it raises a lot of questions, not only about the standard scientific models of history, but it raises a lot of questions about religion as well.
I've seen some pictures on the internet of what could be skeletons of giants, Joseph, and I say to myself, this could be Photoshop.
Sure.
But I'm just not sure.
Well, you know, that's another interesting point, George, and I'm so glad you mentioned it, because one of the things I do in the book is I try to avoid talking about pictures or supposed evidence of these things. What I'm really interested in looking at are the ancient legends and lore concerning
right.
these creatures. And there we're dealing with something very, very unique and something very interesting. Because if you go to Mesoamerica, for example, and examine the legends of the Aztecs or the Mayans or even the Hopi in North America, they all record a conflict, an actual war with the giants. Now, what's really interesting to me, George, is I ran across a scholar. Her name is Adrienne Mayer, and she wrote a series of just wonderful, wonderful books about this very topic. And she points out that in the lore and legends of Mesoamerica, this war against the giants was fought, in their own words, because of the sexual practices of the giants. And I'm thinking, well, my word, you know, that's almost sounding like the biblical story of Sodom and Gomorrah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, add to that the fact that they are saying that this is a war against giants. That reminds you, of course, and I noticed your website that you put up the Greek version of the war against the giants, the Gigantomachy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we have to explain something else here, and that is, why is it that we have the legends of this war against the giants with the Greeks, and then half a world and an ocean away, we find the same legends among completely different cultures with Aztecs and Mayans? So I have to conclude that there's some sort of basis in fact behind all of these things long, long ago in prehistory.
And, you know, and you look at the Bible, you look at Genesis, and
right.
it talks about the giants of it had to have been something, Joseph. It had to have been something.
Well, yeah, you know, this is the thing, George. With the Greek version of the story, we're kind of back again to the idea of cosmic war, and this is the reason I put this book in that series as a kind of a sequel to that book, because in the Greek version of this war, you have, of course, Saturn or Kronos being the principal god at the beginning of the Greek pantheonic history. And then, of course, Kronos sires a race of giants, and there's a large war. And that war had to have been fought, in my opinion, on an interplanetary basis millennia, if not millions of years ago.